I can hold my beer as good as any man, and I'll dance and sing as long as I can.
Welcome to Rhythm and Brews, the monthly podcast where we craftily combine beers and music. I figure I could just go for a new alliteration each month, right?
Okay. Yep,
perfectly pair, masterfully match. Now I've got to think of another one. That's the only problem. So we're back for episode 6?
Yes, I think it is.
Good at counting. And we're down here at Orbit Beers down in South London with the founder?
The founder.
Yeah, Robert, right? I'm not getting that wrong. I have a tendency.
He has past history of getting names wrong.
Yeah. So I've spent about half of a podcast calling the founder of Beer Shop Ben Hudson. Turns out his name's not Ben Hudson. Oh, wait, it is Ben Hudson. See, I can't even remember. It's good. So I think it's all the beer. I don't know. But anyway, we're down with Orbit Beers down in Bermondsey. It's very far south.
Woolworth.
Not Bermondsey. Further than that.
Is it class as Woolworth?
I know we're a couple of miles from Bermondsey. Walworth. Yeah, wonderful Walworth if we're going to be doing the alliteration.
I think it doesn't get mixed up with EastEnders.
Oh, no. Who wants to be mixed up with EastEnders? Nobody.
So as people probably heard, the train going overhead, we're in a railway arch.
Mm-hmm. Bit of authentic brewery action here. So we're down here today to try four of the Orbit mainstays, I believe. But before we get into it, so for anybody who's a first-time listener, Andrew, do you want to give them the once-over?
Yeah, then you can pull me up on how much I get wrong of this. So
of course I will.
The theory behind this, and we are stealing... or paying tribute to the idea. So
stealing.
I'm going to keep mentioning Pete Brown because we kind of nicked his idea that you can enhance the taste of beer by matching a tune to it. So it's in theory, it's a tonal thing, being that low bass tones will emphasise the bitterness in a beer, whereas high tones, it is the way around.
It's the other way around, Andrew.
It's not that
way. Anyway.
It isn't.
Who's the food scientist here?
Not you.
Not me, no.
And higher tones emphasise the sweetness.
Okay, see, I thought it was the other way around.
It's
okay,
not. Sure. You'd think it would be,
sure.
But it's not.
Okay, cool. That means my tasting notes, complete rubbish.
Well, we'll see.
But yes, so obvious, yes, we owe the debt to Pete Brown, who hopefully will be guesting on our podcast next month, so that'll be very exciting. But for this month... we're down at Orbit Beers. So, yep. Robert, welcome.
Thank you.
So, to start us off, do you want to give us a bit of a potted history of Orbit?
Yeah, so very briefly, Orbit has been brewing for nearly 3 years now, kicking off in July 2014. Before that, my beer history was a very, very short one. I drank beer, like most blokes do, but didn't have any deep interest, wasn't really a beer tourist in any way, shape or form. But when I decided to give up work and go travelling, I came back to London two years later,
yep.
I had no clue what to do with my life. So to help me decide, I took my old VW camper van called Brian up to Scotland and toured around every brewery in Scotland for the beer to an extent, but also it just looked like a good journey.
Yeah.
Because being canny, the Scots had put all the breweries in beautiful places. So I spent 5 months touring around. Fantastic experience. Wrote a very bad book about it called The Tea Leaf Paradox, available on Amazon. And just fell in love with the beer industry. Discovered so many new beer styles I hadn't discovered before. Really enjoyed meeting the people I met. And I just knew right away this was something I should have done a long time ago. So came back to London, learned a ton about beer. Well, maybe a couple of pounds of knowledge about beer. And set up Orbit Beers.
Ah, nice. Okay. So no previous brewing experience.
Not at all.
Oh, wow.
Some tea occasionally.
Yeah. Okay.
Of course. Yeah.
That's only brewing I'd done.
But then that must have been a massive leap of faith for you then.
It was, yeah. It was pretty scary. And I did feel like turning around and running to somewhere safe occasionally, but I just couldn't think of anything else I wanted to do. It's kind of a passion, I guess. And so I just kept going, got this arch, and realised that to compete in this wonderful world of beer that we're in, I needed a top brewer.
Yep.
And luckily enough, found one in our head brewer, Mario Canestrelli, I'm very glad to say is still with us today. And Mario has played a very big part in shaping some of the beers that we do as well.
And with a name like that, I'm guessing he's got strong German heritage.
Funny, you should notice that. Not necessarily from his ancestry as such, but certainly from his beer interest very strongly. So Mario loves German beers and other traditional European styles. And when we first met, I was looking to do a couple of German-style beers, and mm-hmm. he said, let's do a Kölsch.
Okay.
I thought, you've got the job.
So is it a collaborative thing coming up with the beer ideas? I mean, is it largely Mario's? How do you decide what you're going to brew?
Mario really drives it. I mean, we have a kind of a playing field, which we stay within, a definition uh-huh. of classic European beer styles. And then Mario really drives the ideas for these, throws them at us. We have a chat about it, and he decides which one to make.
So when you were planning for your trip, were you already aware of a number of breweries through just drinking their beers, or did you actually have to hunt them down?
The obvious ones, apart from the really obvious ones like Tennent's and so on, like Caledonian Brewery, because I'd lived in Edinburgh for quite a while, but... Uh-huh. They were just about the only brewery in Edinburgh, I think, when I was living there. Yeah. So there wasn't an awful lot to start with. But then when I did my research, I recognised that there were 60 or 70 breweries in Scotland at the time.
Now
about 90, I think, which I was surprised about. And as I said, the locations were as diverse as you could imagine. The first one I visited was on the island of Unst, which is the northernmost of Shetland's 16 inhabited islands. Took me 2 days to get there.
Dedication.
I mean,
I was really thirsty.
The shipping logistics of that, just in itself.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah. I've always thought that the Scots were generally very level-headed. So I mean, that just reaffirms that decision. I mean,
well, yeah,
makes complete
sense. My camper van only does 50 miles an hour, so on the first day I left really early. My aim was just to cross the border into Scotland, which I just managed. Stayed the night in Lockerbie. And then I had to get up to Aberdeen for the ferry by that evening, which I just managed. And the ferry ride was horrendous. Don't ever, ever take the ferry from Aberdeen to Shetland. It's brutal.
Yeah.
Even the van was sick.
Wow. Okay. Fair play. And in terms of, because obviously you would have had to try a lot of beer on that trip. And did you come out with any sort of strong favourites? I mean, you mentioned already that the beginning of your Orbit relationship with Mario was the Kölsch.
It was mostly traditional cask ales, to be honest, in most of the breweries. There's some variations on that theme. But I'd say the brewery that really stuck with me was the Highland Brewing Company in Orkney.
Okay.
And the guy there, Rob Hill is his name, really, really... quality guy, really good brewer, and the beers he gave me to take away were the first to get drunk, and I would look out for his beers anywhere. I mean, there were many good ones, of course, but that one would probably be my favourite.
Nice. And these days, I'm guessing you sort of looking at the range of Orbit and all the stuff that you guys have been doing with your White Label series as well, I'm guessing your tastes are diversifying more and more, or you did mention that you sort of try and keep it within a core
European theme.
Yeah, to be honest, I love a nice hoppy IPA from time to time, but I've always been drawn to the styles in Europe, the German beers, particularly the Czech beers. And I felt there really wasn't sufficient representation of those in the emerging craft market. And so that fitted really as well, commercially, as well as it was just the beers we wanted to make. So when Mario met me that day and he talked about Kölsch and talked about Altbier and Rauchbier and so on, I thought, actually, that all makes a ton of sense. So we've stuck to it. And I think we've now ingrained that is what we do, hopefully, in the eyes of London's bars, pubs and drinkers. And our plan is very much to stick to it and keep sharing those styles with people who want to drink them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as a customer, for me, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I think... the London beer bubble is awash with, American pale ales, West Coast pale ales.
All you need to do to make a good beer these days, get a shitload of Citra hops and chuck it in and like just keep going until it's like so hoppy that your entire back of your mouth just sort of dries up as it approaches your mouth. It's that's how you make a good beer, isn't it? That's standard. No?
Well, so I mean, for me, so Alt beer stands out because that was probably one of the first times I drank a dark beer was on a German holiday in my teens, I think. And, you know, and I
back in the 40s, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And out beer, I just took as being, because it was dark, I just took it as being a bitter. You know, that's I'm going to order that because it's not a lot. I've never been a lager drinker, and out beer is just like out beer bitter. Thank you. And it's like, yep, that was my first continental dark beer before I set foot in Belgium.
Oh. And you were introduced to everything above 10%, right?
Yes, yeah. I have fond memories of drinking out beer at late teens and
Well, you got into it a lot sooner than me, but it's my favourite style now, I would say. Yeah. Of all beers, and I took the guys last year over to Cologne and Dusseldorf so we do some research.
do you remember much of that research?
Apparently it was intensive, but otherwise not a thing.
So I mean, is there a style that you haven't yet attempted that you would like to try?
God, I hope so.
What's forming in your mind on the horizon?
Well, I think we do our beers, I guess, in two clutches. The four core beers that we do, of which three we're going to hopefully touch on today, and plus one regular occasional beer. But we do like to use our white label series to explore some other styles, which... Yep. Probably, for instance, we could take a fairly well-known style like a Pilsner, but maybe hop it a little differently. We used Wakatoo, New Zealand hops, for example. Right. So we'll keep down that road.
That sounds quite nice.
I like it.
I love the whole time with white label and experimental, and that's a really good theme. The whole synonym with white label 12 inches. And,
well, I was about to say. Yeah. So one more thing before we get into the matching the beers with the music. You've got an obvious music angle here. So what is the story behind that? Is that just a was that just you have a love of music and therefore wanted to bring it in, or is there something a bit deeper than that?
No, that's about it. I've just loved music all my life. My earliest memories are listening to my sister's record player and just playing their records when I was 4 years old, buying my first record when I was 7 or 8, and I can't tell you how many thousands of gigs I've been to. And I think possibly because I was denied any musical ability in my genes whatsoever, I had to find another way to express it. And beer and music, it just seemed to me like two things that go together perfectly.
Okay, cool. Well, let's. I suppose on that note, shall we kick off and get into beer number one?
We're going to attempt beer number one.
Okay.
Beer number one.
So, beer number one is... Drumroll.
Drumroll.
This one's yours, isn't it, Andrew?
It is mine. I got to choose mine. You just got given yours.
I did. Yeah. Which, to be honest, is it a bad thing?
No, that's
quite
fine.
Like a bit of difference.
So the first one is Peel, presumably named after John Peel.
Yep.
It's a blonde ale. 4.3?
Yep.
Yep. I've made some notes on taste and what I think of it, but do you want to talk a little bit about why you named a beer after John Peel?
Yeah, so we originally had a core range of three beers, and we brought this out as a special in spring 2015 and decided it was so good we'd make it a permanent beer. And we described it as a session blonde ale. And session immediately makes me think of John Peel. Because of the John Peel sessions. To add to that, the Belgian yeast strain that we use in this imparts some peppery and some lemony flavours to the beer, and lemon peel, it just all seemed like it was destined.
Yes, to be.
So it could be called nothing else, we felt.
Very good.
Fair play. Okay. So, Andrew, do you want to give us your tasting
My
notes?
Tasting. And then, we have been drinking it. We've been sipping it as
we go
along.
We have. So you can tell Andrew how wrong he is when he gives you the tasting notes.
No. So I'm glad you mentioned about the lemons and the peppery notes, because that's what the label says. For me, so it's a very, very, very pale beer, as you'd expect from a blonde beer. A bit of sparkle, a bit of carbonation going on there, but not too fizzy. Yeah?
Yeah.
What am I smelling when I go? I was picking maybe some sort of floralness, maybe even elderflowerness out of this. And I don't know if that's the yeast that causes that, that brings that out, because there's no hoppy smell in that.
No.
But
it's smooth as anything.
It is. And then the taste, very light carbonation, it's light, it's crisp, dry, some bitter undertones going on in there, but not too bitter. I mean, I'm like you said before, I mean, a pale ale for me over hot pale ales, I don't enjoy. It's probably one of my least favourite styles, but this is nice. This is, like you say, it's very sessionable. Or smashable, is that the word we're supposed to be using? For beers that you can...
It depends. That's
you
the,
can guzzle.
That's definitely the Australian word
what,
that
smashable?
We use. Smashable. Yeah, smashable, mate. Smash a couple of those.
But
couple
it is,
of those
I mean, tinnies. It is. So I was obviously then trying to pick a track that was in some way tied into John Peel. So there's obviously a massive back catalogue of all the sessions to choose from. But equally, there are certain key bands, I think, that are tied in to John Peel that he championed throughout his broadcasting career. So I started off with The Fall. This is where I run through all the bands. I could have picked Luke, and Luke hates this bit, but I'm going to run through a few bands that I could have possibly picked. But I struggled. I was trying to find a good Fall track that I thought would go with this. I wasn't necessarily trying to choose a type of song. I'm going to deviate completely from the theory now and say all I was trying to do was capture the fact that this is a light beer, a crisp beer. It reminds me of sunshine. It, you know, when you talk about session beers, I was thinking about chilling out, whether you're in a beer garden or whether you're at a barbecue. That sort of vibe I was going for that I thought would make this beer even better.
And you can't do that to The Fall.
You can't
ever.
Do that to The Fall.
No, because they're rubbish.
They're not rubbish, but they're very unique. I mean, if you want to talk about you know, the Belgian yeast and the uniqueness that it imparts, I could have dragged that out as some sort of tenuous connection.
Yeah, see, maybe if it was like a Gosa, maybe then we could do The Fall. I mean, something completely challenging that most people hate. I think that's probably something good for The Fall.
Yeah, but, sure. I don't know why you don't like The Fall, dude. So instead, I went for another band that is closely aligned with John Peel, which is The Undertones. And I didn't choose the obvious track, Teenage Kicks, so I fished around and I thought there were plenty of good songs I could have chosen, and Fergal's vocals on all the Undertone tracks, you know, it's synonymous, it's so distinctive, and then harking back to this whole concept of a nice, crisp, light, sunshiny beer, I chose Here Comes the Summer.
Oh, okay, so shall we give it a listen and see how much this enhances the beer?
Yes.
Okay, so let's go. So this is The Undertones with Here Comes the Summer. Undertones with Here Comes the Summer.
Okay, so I get that I wasn't living up to the whole theory. I was just going for a nice summery tune.
Well, okay, so first off, right, I'm just going to go back and rubbish what you think is the actual theory, that high tones...
Check out the article by Dr. Felipe.
Don't care. High tones bring out the sweetness of a beer.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that was very high tone heavy. I'd say Undertones, they're not a very bassy band.
No. They have more bassy songs, but yeah.
Well,
yeah,
definitely. But like that is, it's a nice, you know, it's up, it sits in the up register.
Yes.
I've got this weird thing where I kind of visualise music in space. And that is very much up here instead down here, which is very handy on a podcast when you do big arm gestures.
Yeah.
That did not enhance the sweetness, though. I thought that that was like it was really nice. It kind of it brought out the high notes of the beer. Brought out the sort of the, almost the bitterness slightly.
Really,
sort of just accentuated it to a point, which I thought made it really nice. So base to me has that real kind of cloying, like
I get that. I
you
get
know,
that.
Complex yeah, yeah. flavors yeah. like the sort of you know a stout has base, or like a nice
a stout is bitter.
But oh, shut up! But or like a nice, rich kind of, you know, saying like a saison sometimes has a bit of base because it's got that kind of complexity and richness down the bottom. But that didn't. But I did think that actually did suit the beer quite nicely.
Good.
I mean,
good.
What do you reckon?
It did it for me. Definitely felt a moment of enhancement.
Yeah.
which I think was maybe the summery feel gave me a sort of bright yellow feel. The beer's got this yellow colour. And then just as the song started, the sun started shining right in, just bang on cue. So, yeah, I think that's a pretty good match, actually.
There
and
you go.
I can see why Mr. Peel might have enjoyed that song so much himself.
And as we were saying, as we started playing the tracks, I mean, obviously this beer has, it's got lemon undertones, it's got elderflower undertones, pepper undertones. I mean, it's matched for it. It's the same way that it was kind of lemon peel and, you know, it made sense.
Absolutely, but we can't recommend drinking it during teenage kicks. The song's fine, but...
Yes, drink in moderation, kids. Oh, wait, no, don't drink at all. Jesus, oh, God, we're going to get taken off the air. Shall we move on to beer number two, then?
Beer number two.
Okay.
Beer number two.
So, beer number two we have it poured. This is Nico. Is that correct?
It is. Hello, Nico.
Hello, Nico. Not Nico Case, though.
No,
different Nico.
I always think of that whenever we're bottling and I put the bottles of Nico into a case.
Oh,
it's
wow.
a Nico case. I think of her a lot. She doesn't know this, but I definitely do.
I was going to say, are you a dad? Because that was like world-class dad joke right there.
I've been a dad for a long time. Yeah, well-practiced at bad dad jokes.
Yeah, I'm slowly learning. It's a very slow process.
But she's one of the members of New Pornographers as well, isn't she?
Yes.
Am I right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm just thinking if you could ever do a New Pornography beer, or you'd ever get it on the shelves anywhere, or what you...
Well, I'm thinking of a... I mean, there's already a lot of talk about dodgy beer labels at the moment, so I don't think that that would really make it. I don't know. Anyway, so Nico is a Kolsch. So do you want to tell us a bit more about the beer and sort of what inspired it, where it came in the story, and maybe a little bit on why it's called Nico?
Yep, so it was the first beer we decided to make, the Kolsch. The style is from Cologne. Köln, in Germany. Köln.
Yeah. And, so good.
It's a beer that people seem to love across the board because on one hand, if you're a lager drinker, you can pretend it's a lager, which it is, 50%, which we'll talk about in a moment. And if you like a little bit of fruitiness in your beer, then it's got that too. So yeah, it's kind of a hybrid beer. It's fermented like an ale temperatures, ale yeast,
okay.
and then it's conditioned at very low temperatures, around 0 degrees for 3 or 4 weeks, which cleans it up, gives it that nice, fresh, refreshing, clean, dry flavour that you can pick up as well. So it's a fabulous style of beer. I mean, why this is not drunk more widely across the world, I have no idea.
But I was looking for sort of other examples of Kolsch. Kolsch? I always really struggle with the O with the umlaut. It's the sound that makes it ridiculous. But the Kolsch. I struggled to find sort of other big name examples of it. And most of them, well, because
as
it
in
is.
In the UK, you mean?
Well, it's a protected beer.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
the name is. So that's why this is a Cologne style lager, right?
Yeah, so under European law, unless it's made in Cologne, you can't call it Kolsch. So give us a couple of years.
Yes, exactly. We'll soon have that. We'll call it exactly what we like.
There's got to be some silver lining to Brexit.
Exactly.
No.
Okay, so and so is this because I was doing my research because you know I don't know if I've ever had a Kolsch before this.
Mm.
So I was doing my research and is this one filtered or is this unfiltered?
So all our beers are unfiltered.
Okay.
Kolsch, you are correct. Would normally be a filtered beer. There is a rare variant on that called Weiss, which yes. is an unfiltered Kölsch.
Which is different to Weissbier, yes. isn't it? Yes. Yeah. It's Weiss, yes.
Yeah. So no, we decided that whilst it wasn't totally true to the Kölsch style, we wanted to make a beer that was mostly true to it, but maintain a little more flavour in there, and we just don't like filtering beer.
I completely agree, yeah. yes. I'm a big fan, especially when it comes to anything approaching lager. I think filtering it just makes it taste like a Heineken or a Carlsberg.
It's, yeah, and why would you do that?
Exactly.
But yeah, the name Nico, it is the Nico of Velvet mm-hmm. Underground fame, mm-hmm. of course, who was born in Cologne. And her family birth name was Päffchen. And we believe she's distantly related to the founders of the Päffchen Kölsch Brewery in Cologne. And it just so happens that Päffchen's pretty much our favourite Kölsch.
There you go.
Wow.
See, that is a perfect round circle. I mean, did you already have that knowledge? Did you have to go searching for that? Like,
a little bit of research was involved. Yeah.
It's just because that is so neat. It just ties it up really nice and neatly. Yep. It's good.
Yeah. And when we chose the beer names, we wanted to keep them very short, as people may have noticed, and memorable. Yep. And we wanted them to stand alone. So if you'd never heard of John Peel or never heard of Velvet Underground, actually, that doesn't matter at all. It's just a beer name. But if you do know the story, then that adds a little bit.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a nice little... You should print that on the label.
I know. I like the labels, I like the design, I like the bottle caps especially. They're excellent. But yeah, maybe I'm just wondering whether you could do the little potted history on the label.
Well, it might take you up on that.
So I did my little tasting notes here, which are always fun. So, the boring bits out of the way. Straw pour, it's very straw, which is typical of a Kölsch, apparently, what I've been told. Slightly dark straw, a little bit cloudy, not too lively. No real lacing to talk of, although that was from the bottle that I had yesterday, and this one is a little bit more.
What's lacing? Tell me what lacing is.
It's when you sort of swirl it and you get that nice little... It's a bit like that. See, again, visual on a podcast.
Okay. Wow, yeah, okay.
There you go. It's what it leaves on the side of the glass.
Look at that. I'm learning all the
there
time.
There you go. Thank you, Untapped, for teaching me about lacing. And to me, this has a very clean, crisp smell. Much like the last one, actually, the last blonde. It's got a very clean... sort of not much aroma to speak of. Which is, you know, pretty typical of a lager. But as you said, this is like a lager hybrid. So that's why I was thinking this tastes definitely, it's more full-bodied than a standard kind of pils, which this is, it's brewed with Pilsner...
Lager malt, a little bit Pilsner
lager
malt.
Yeah, okay. Cool. I also apparently, so I made the mistake and I served it slightly warmer than it should have been yesterday when I was picking my song, so...
You fool.
This is probably just going to be completely thrown out the window in the end. Here we go. There's a complexity here that you don't really get with most lagers. However, it's still an enjoy around the barbecue or on a beach type of drink.
I've already used the barbecue reference.
Shut up. It's the kind of taste... I quite often try and start with my notes and then usually just go off piece. So I said it's the kind of taste that you would want to introduce to like a broski lager drinker to try and educate them as to the niceness that could be had with beers. Introduce him to the finer things in life. It's not massively challenging, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think it's got a complexity there that is quite nice, but it's, you know, it's a nice... introductory sort of beer to get into the complexities of nice craft beer.
I like that idea that you could give this to a lager drinker.
A broski.
Things can be different. Try this brewski.
I think it is a good gateway beer.
Exactly.
For that. Yeah, most certainly. But I think if people haven't tried Kölsch, please do, particularly the Orbit one, of course. But please also, if you happen to be travelling through northwest Germany, find time to pop into Cologne, because drinking Kölsch in Cologne is an experience in itself. The beer is served in straight 200ml glasses.
Oh, wow.
Which at first might seem strange, you know, it's a lot of washing up.
Yeah.
But it's designed, of course, to make sure the beer retains its aroma and its temperature throughout its drinking.
Right.
You're not going to be thirsty because the waiters, the Kürbis, are coming around constantly, and as soon as they spot an empty glass, it's gone and replaced with a full one. And for the beginner, this can be quite traumatic because you don't actually know how to stop drinking until you notice, dilemma, hopefully, one of the locals popping a little beer mat on top, which is the signal for the Cuba to come over and count up all the little strokes he's put on your beer mat and calculate the total bill.
Wow.
So yeah, it's a great experience. Of course, there are many Kölsch breweries in Cologne. You can try a few different ones. See, what's your favourite?
And is there much variation in the taste of Kölsch, like, across the board?
I would say so, yeah. I would say there is a bit of variation, all within the style definition.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely some variation. People would pick one or the other. Our Kölsch is different to many that you might find over there, but it's probably similar to a couple. So there is bit of bread, I would say.
Okay, cool. Okay, so in terms of music, I decided that I needed something. So I needed something summery but complex.
You're stealing my thunder.
Shut up. Or you stole my thunder already.
Yeah.
So I was going to try and go... I was going to try and avoid going for the namesake just because I'm... I like to be contrary.
You're contrary, I was about to say. Yeah.
So I'm a bit merry, quite contrary. But if I was going to go for a Nico, then I would probably go for a nice early album track. Something like I'll Keep It With Mine. So not Velvet Underground. Go for something of her solo material. Mm-hmm. Which there's not enough of. It's basically she released like two or three albums and then live albums for the rest of her life. Is she still alive?
Sadly not. No. She died, I think, in 80-something.
She died quite young.
Quite young. She did have a son called Aaron. She called him Ari. And a bit of Orbit trivia, we once released a beer called Ari.
Oh. There you go. And was it kind of like a son of a Kölsch?
It was.
Perfect.
Exactly.
See?
That's exactly why it was named such.
Nice. Yeah. Very nice. So so I thought that I'd go for something a bit more modern. So something that combined with the beer, to me, sort of is a bit more evocative. Something that's quite evocative, brings out the lows and the highs, and is very summery, but yeah, not a standard typical sort of pop song. So so I've gone for an artist called Tycho. Don't know if I'm getting blank.
Is that he or she?
It's a band, actually.
Okay.
So I think it's fronted by a guy, and I don't know if he is originally Tycho and he's just
Tycho,
built T-Y-C-H-O.
The
band. Yeah, T-Y-C-H-O. And this is off his first album, their first album, and it's called Awake. So I'm going to play it, and then we'll see what you guys think.
Thank you.
So that was Tycho with Awake. And we've just been talking for about...
It was called Awake.
It was called Awake.
Okay, yeah.
Did I say that?
No, yeah,
it is Awake. It's definitely Awake. Yeah, yeah. Okay. You made me doubt myself, Andrew.
No, I just suddenly thought I could think of chilling out and relaxing. Not really...
You think it should be called Asleep? Dozing. Dozing Slightly.
Yeah, laid back.
To be honest, I don't think that the song name Dozing Slightly...
No, it's not a crowd.
It's not really appealing, is it?
No. It's not dragging you in, is it?
No. So that kind of worked. I mean, you got the evocative sunset speeches.
I think you were going for a similar sort of thing that I was going for, in as much as you're capturing a sensibility.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was trying to evoke a mood. I was trying to evoke an environment.
Yeah.
Which is, it's one of those things where I think it's, you can go, I mean, we've had this experience before where I tried to go for the full scientific approach and just kind of bring out, had a particularly sour beer. It was an unhopped Brutish, which it's a very challenging beer. And so I tried to pick out something that would bring out the sweetness in it. And the problem was, I think we just picked a song that we all hated, that was terrible pop. It was really bad, wasn't it? Can't even remember. Erased it from my memory. So it just made the entire thing quite unpleasant. So, you know, I think evoking a mood is much better, because then you can sort of start to get a feel. There's no crackling. I've just spilled beer on the laptop, but it is okay. It hasn't cut out yet.
We're not running around in emergencies.
But yeah, I mean...
I get where you were going with that. And
here we go.
I'm going to agree with you. I think, you know, the song per se... is a bit meh. But
is that your official opinion?
No, but I get where you're going with that, because it's not dissimilar to what I was saying with mine. And it was, you know, I can picture myself in the sun, shades on, maybe not in California because I'd burn, but you know, relaxing, chilling, and that would go down a treat.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah, I got a bit of the beach and sunset thing as well. Maybe again enhanced by the sun having just about set over to the Kennington way.
Sunset, which is Kennington. Very similar to California.
Yeah. Starts it off. Yeah, but when that song started, Café Del Mar wandered into my head, which enhanced that beachy sunset thing. And then we got the semi-industrial drum beat coming in, which at first upset me, but then I thought, wait a minute, no, that's good, because of course Cologne sits in the former industrial heartland of the Ruhr Valley, and
see,
so
perfect.
That connection actually brought another dimension. So whilst I would agree with Andrew that I'm not rushing out to buy the song, I applaud your pick.
Next time you pick up a Nico, you might just find yourself sticking on some Café Del Mar meets Kraftwerk. Sounds good.
If I can find that, I certainly will.
I'm loving this whole sort of 6 degrees of separation that you're able to come up with beers, music. That's an awesome talent.
This is a...
Well, if it is a talent, it's my only one, so I'll stick with it.
Okay, shall we move on to beer number 3?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Are we ready for this?
We are.
Okay.
Beer number 3.
Which is?
I'm going to call this Ivo, because that's how I read it. Is it Ivo or Evo?
It is Ivo.
Good.
Okay, so we got it right for once.
But is Ivo an abbreviation for his name, or he was called Ivo?
He was called Ivo. When people ask about the beer, they will call it Evo or Ivo.
Yeah, Ivo.
Either of which, I think Evo is forgivable because it's a European pronunciation of the name.
Okay.
And we do have quite a few people from Europe following us because they're called Evo. But he was called Ivo, but the beer's not Ivo, which is the other
right.
way.
Right, okay.
Ask for it.
So I need to ask now.
Well, I'm going to let Robert explain.
Who is Ivo?
Okay, so Ivo...
Oh, I'm too young.
You're not too young.
Never too young. Ivo Watts Russell was the founder of 4AD Records.
A conversation off-air now makes complete sense.
There you go. So, yeah, that was Mario's idea, actually. Mario came up with the idea to call the beer Ivo, which I thought was a brilliant, brilliant idea. It fitted with... the way we were naming our beers, and I was a huge 4AD fan. I mean, I bought virtually everything that the label released. And they were also a label as obsessed with the art of the record sleeve as they were with the roster of the musical artists they had. And that, at the time, was special, unique even. So they got a massive following. And I don't think there's any other label quite like them. Creation Factory, of course. You know, there's lots of great, great examples. But I think 4AD stood out. So naming a beer after Ivo was very special.
Fair play. And did he have any input?
He didn't. He did find out about it. A guy wrote a book about 4AD and its history. He's a music writer called Martin Aston.
Okay.
And Martin happens to live in Peckham, and he came across our beer one day, and he phoned us up and said, "Have you named this after Ivo Watts Russell?" And we said, "Yeah, we have." "Is that okay?" He said, "No, no, it's fine. I'll let him know." So Ivo now lives in New Mexico Desert. And he told him about it, and Ivo got in touch. And he said, "I'm sure you've actually named this after your dog or something and not me, but, you know, I'm thoroughly moved and touched." And so that was nice. So we sent him some beers over, and we got to know him. And through him, we got to know Von Oliver.
Okay.
Who was the artist of 4AD. And Von's a great character, and he came in here one day, and we sat and got royally drunk together, at the end of which we'd agreed to do a beer for his Pixies retrospective exhibition at Greenwich University. And so that led us to doing a beer called Hey, named after one of the Pixies tracks, of course. And we gave him a bunch of beer, of course, for the private view, which went swimmingly, and then just took off when Mr. Frank Black himself turned up unannounced. Just wandered in and, "Hello, you know, can I have one of your beers?" "Yeah, of course you can."
Wow, okay.
So that was, a nice little journey. All starting from Mario's idea to call the beer Ivo.
Wow.
Is that, do you think that's probably the most starstruck you've been so far in the history of Orbit? Or have there been other points? I mean, deviating from the beer slightly.
Well, history of my life, I think, is the most starstruck I've been.
But that is pretty special to have. I mean, so that's a reference from your youth and buying records, and you suddenly have some sort of personal contact with these people. That's
It really it was like the lovely completion of a circle of things. So that was great. That was a lot of fun doing that as well. And it's music is important to us, and we were currently in, connected to another very cool band who we're hoping to do something with soon, Public Service Broadcasting.
To be fans.
Yeah. Like them a lot.
Yeah, so that's in discussion.
Very exciting. Exclusive news here on Rhythm and Brews.
That's very cool. I do like them a lot.
Yeah,
they are fantastic. Oh, that beer is going to be interesting. So getting back to Ivo.
Oh, God, this is now my boring notes now. So this was far more interesting.
Oh, wait. So before you get on to your notes.
Okay.
So this is a pale ale. Any reason for the pale ale? Was there anything that you were particularly going for, or...?
It's just too nice a style to ignore. It would just been wrong not to have a pale ale in our stable. But we wanted to make it not overtly hoppy. We wanted to make it with a mix of American European hops. We wanted to make it with a nice dry finish.
Yeah.
So it's our pale ale. There's any number of diversities of pale ale out there, of course. This is our one. And we're rather fond of it.
Nice. Andrew, on to your tasting notes.
Well, I enjoyed drinking it. So my notes. So, So golden coloured, darker than the blonde.
Clear. Definitely.
Well, no, there's a bit of a haze in there. So
again, I like the way that we, for a podcast...
I know, I love we can hold this up to the sunlight.
Holder, everybody appreciates the holding up of the glass. It's almost as much as the sniffing.
So, like you say, there's hop. You smell it and there's hops in there, but it's not some massive hop bomb. It's not exploding in your face, but you know it's going to be hoppy.
What do you know what hops are in it?
Oh, you know, whatever we can get on the hop contract.
Very good.
Oh, that is so much more refreshing than the... Oh, yes, we use...
It's got to be Sirogios or nothing.
Organic, single-origin Citra hops, totally.
So, no, in all serious notes, does that mean it varies between batch then?
Not necessarily between batch. It evolves slowly as we discover new taste sensations.
You weren't going to go down the whole version
whatever of your beers each time and bring out limited releases.
Ivo V4.5.
Well, watch your space. We'll see what happens.
So you can, I can smell the hops, but it's not blasting my face off with hops.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I'm tasting it.
I can see that.
Yep. So I'm picking up some malty sweetness in there. I'm picking up some grapefruitiness.
Oh, yeah.
I don't find it very bitter, surprisingly.
Mm. Oh, it's interesting, because I've got the hop bitterness in the back there.
I found the blonde more bitter than this is. But I don't know if that's because it's less bitter or it's just balanced out more with the maltiness and I'm not picking it up as much.
Yeah.
Nicely fizzy. Very nice. I enjoyed it. And it was very difficult trying to pick something from the iconic 4AD back catalogue.
And of course you had to go pure on book.
Yeah, of course, because I mean it's...
He warned me beforehand. When he gave me the beers to try beforehand, he's like, now you stick to the brief.
Yep.
Make sure that you're picking from the label. he's clearly gone for that. But
4AD's a nice back.
Exactly.
Catalog. It's not hard to come up with something that I like, and then I think it's going to match the beer. So I'm thinking, my logic was, so I'm going for 4AD, but... I'm picking up, like I said, I've got a malty sweetness in there going on. Even though it's a pale ale, I've got some sweetness going on there. So this is where I was trying to work the theory.
Yep.
And I'm going to go high tones, your high register that you said, your up here bit that you said,
yep,
to try and emphasise a sweetness in it.
Okay.
And bring that out, almost a mellowness, if you like. I think this is a well-balanced beer, so I'm trying to get some sweetness and mellowness coming out.
Even though I said that the high tones bring out the bitterness.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Okay, so, like I say, nice roster. You've got current stuff like Grimes.
Hey.
Really good one to pick. You've got Throwing Muses, Belly, Breeders, Pixies, all great bands, but weren't quite right. Bon Iver or Bon Iver?
Bon Iver.
Is 4AD. So could have gone with something like that.
His falsetto...
Would have gone well with that.
Got the nice top notes there, but yeah, also slightly bassy, I think. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. Also, we would have had like two songs of chillout music. And... I know.
Well, this is going to be quite chillaxed. then you have to go to Cocteau Twins.
Mm. Mm.
And not least because they've got a song called Ivo.
Oh, there you go.
Which would have been,
Side one, track slam one dunk. Treasure.
Yeah, yeah. But I can't do that. But you've got loads of good stuff. Heaven on Las Vegas, Pearly Dewdrops Drops, loads of good tracks.
You can probably list at least 15 more tracks.
I'm just trying to show all the research I did.
Of course, yeah.
So where did I go in the end? I went for This Mortal Coil.
Oh.
So Ivo's involved with This Mortal Coil. I understand that he was part of the... He was the lead of...
Collective. Yeah, very much so. Central to it, I would say.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so then the obvious song, if I'm going to pick This Mortal Coil, is Song to the Siren, which I think the highness, the etherealness of this, the mellowness, the vibe of this will go with the sweetness and enhance the sweetness of this pale ale.
Okay, so should we give it a go and see if this is the case?
Even if it doesn't, it's a good tune.
Okay, so this is This Mortal Coil with Song to the Siren.
On the floating shipless oceans, I did all my best to smile till your singing eyes and fingers drew me. Did I dream? You dreamed about me. Search me not. Search me not. Come back tomorrow. Oh, my heart. Oh, my heart. Shines from the sun.
Was This Mortal Coil with Song to the Siren, which is, as you were saying whilst it was playing, it is a
Tim Buckley cover.
Tim Buckley cover.
Yeah.
Don't know what you're talking about with those high tones.
Okay, well, maybe I was just looking for an excuse to play that.
You're wrong. It was a lovely song, and I think, but actually, you know what? I think it did enhance the beer. I thought it broadened it out. It was like,
okay,
it made the beer do this.
You're using big arms now.
Yeah. Which is very, again, very handy on a podcast. But it did. It kind of broadened the taste out. It was the flavour kind of opened up with the song. That was just...
No, I think Liz Fraser's vocals, I love her singing style. It's so, again, so distinctive. I talked about Fergal Sharkey briefly for the undertones, but her style stands out a mile. You know it's her on anything you ever hear with her.
Well, it's almost, she's got, like... you used the word ethereal before we played the song, right?
Yeah.
And that very much so. But it's almost like a Arabic influences, like the sort
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
She's got the weird sort of. It's like she works on a different musical scale to Western music.
Well, I seem to remember the whole thing with the Cocteau Twins and her vocal style is.
Yeah.
She's using her vocals as another instrument, as opposed to, you know, it's another thing in the lineup of the instruments. As opposed to telling a story, it doesn't have to be.
Just the way it should be.
Yeah. So,
well, no, both tell a story and as an instrument. That's my opinion. But you know.
Yes. So I think so. They have limited releases. This Mortal Coil. I think they always tried to put a cover version out on the EPs they did. I love that song. That's awesome.
Good for you.
Yeah, I could listen to that forever. Liz Fraser, Cocteau Twins, 4AD. I think what struck me listening to it was the resonant quality of her voice. And I think that resonated with the beer for me quite nicely.
See, do you just want to take my place?
I know.
Because I think you two would be quite good.
Yeah, these guys are writing down the lines for me.
These sound bites.
Because you didn't know what songs we were going to be playing beforehand.
No. This is pretty exciting. It's like Desert Island Discs in reverse.
You will like this song, even if we have to make you like this song.
I completely agree with you. I think you put it in a much better way than I did. I tried to use arms, you used words, which is probably better for a podcast. It's you're right, it is. It brought out... It's
a warmth, a resonance, an timbre.
It brought out...
Timbre warmth, yep.
I don't think I've ever used the word resonance for a beer, but that is... I mean, I think it matches perfectly. The resonance of the sound brought out the resonance of the beer. It brought out the width and the sort of the... Again, I'm failing at words.
Well, no. Any hoppy beer has resonance.
But you say that, but that's the thing. Like, to me, hoppy beers are usually, the hoppier they are, the thinner they are. It's like a... I mean, again, not using thin in the I'm talking about in a sort of sound quality, not necessarily a taste quality, because obviously a thin beer is quite flavourless. But a hoppiness to me is a very kind of... It's a high, thin frequency. And it's not that resonance. Whereas to me, it's the malts in this kind of
That's what I kind of meant by the warmth and the resonance. Yeah. It's the Maris Otter malt in there. It's just
makes sense.
Yeah, a bit of depth to it. Yeah,
definitely.
I mean, lots of pale ales I've had, or you know, APAs or whatever. You know, you're choosing music to emphasise maybe citrus tones or things like that, or tropical fruits or things like that. But I'm not. I'm, you know, it's...
Yeah, you're trying to get the resonance.
Yes.
Mm. Or in your
or any
original...
excuse to play...
But should we go back to your description? What? The high tones will bring out the sweetness.
There were high tones in that. There were strings going on. There were strings.
You're wrong.
There was harps.
Anyway, okay, so shall we move on to beer four?
Have you had enough of that? Do you not want to talk more anymore about...
Do you have more
to say? No, I have no more other than saying, yet again, I really like that song.
Okay, well, let's move on to the serious beer now. Oh. This is beer number four.
Beer number four.
Okay, so beer number four, not number seven. Beer number four.
Do you know the Lucky Seven theory?
No.
I'm just throwing this out.
Lucky Sevens. Yes.
In the theory being that every album, the best track on the album is the seventh track.
It's really not true, though.
Compilation of your favourite album of picking the seventh track and see if it holds true.
We attempted this with we run a music quiz every once in a while, and we attempted this by just picking the seventh track of every album to see if anybody could recognise.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the seventh track is quite often a really obscure... Like, if, for example, you'd think Nirvana Nevermind, okay, big album. Standout tracks, anybody got anything to chuck in there?
Smells Like.
Smells Like, you've got...
Lithium.
You got Lithium, yeah. Territorial Pissings.
I love that song.
It's a great song. It's not really the one that you'd pick out as the standout track. But anyway.
I stole your thunder.
To the beer that we're drinking now, which is Seven, which is a double brown stout.
It is.
And you didn't abbreviate it to
DBS?
DBS, yeah.
You're four beers in. Yeah, acronyms aren't your thing.
Dippers are a thing now. So you should just do a
Have you done any dippers?
Any what?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, good. So I'm guessing the name is a reference to 7 inches.
I beg your pardon again. Well, yes, it is. So it's in homage to the 7-inch single, you know, classic, iconic, wonderful, and sort of plays back to our spindle adapter thing, yeah. And all of that. But there is.
Sorry, that was off record originally. So just to give people a feel, the spindle adapter is basically your unofficial logo, right? Which is a bit of a callback to
even official logo. Yeah, no, it's my earliest memory of anything, certainly anything iconic, was the spindle adapter. I loved the different shapes and styles of them, and the first thing I ever did, I think, was try to play records on my sister's record player.
And so she let you?
They weren't in it at the time.
Sisters never let you play records on the record player.
Had to pick the lock to their bedroom door, but I was determined. So that's really why that's our logo, because I think it stands up as an icon. Obviously, very, very strong music connections and a very early memory for me. And it links to the origin of the name of the brewery as well a little bit, because pretty much at the time when I was 4 years old and learning about spindle adapters,
I was standard.
Beginning to meet friends for the first time. And unfortunately, I had a slight speech impediment where I couldn't say the letter R, which is a bugger when you're called Robert. One third of your name is made up of that letter. Yep. So people say, "What's your name?" I'd say, "Obit." Obit. Now, today people might hear Hobbit, but then they heard Orbit. And fair so that play. Was my nickname, Orbit, and hence the brewery.
That's amazing. Perfect. And the spindle, obviously, so it comes back to the 7-inch, which those under the age of... Jesus.
40?
Yeah, I don't know. That's the thing. It's like, I know what it is because I'm into vinyl, but the spindle is the little bit that when you... So for those, you know, the records, the things that look like CDs,
let's go
but
back
bigger.
To square one here. Yeah.
Actually, I mean, even kids today won't even know what a CD is. This is really sad. Anyway, 7-inch singles quite often have the very large hole in the middle so that they could adapt to jukeboxes, right?
Exactly, yeah.
And so to play them on an ordinary record player, you would need a spindle to go in the middle.
An adapter.
An adapter.
Or a spider.
The spindle. Oh, sorry, the other way. Yes.
Yeah.
Why do I call them spiders? Why do I know them? That must be a phrase. They look like spiders?
No, they look nothing like spiders. Fair enough. Look a little bit like spinning stars, but...
Nunchucks, yeah.
Yeah, nothing like a spider. I had no idea where you got that from. This is a very early memory, which probably explains a lot of unwelcome things in your personality.
So you're explaining this. So they go in the middle of a 7-inch single so that you can play them on a turntable.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's the name. But it was also, at the time, I was listening heavily to the Fever Ray album. Huge fan of Fever Ray. Yeah, and my favourite track on that is 7.
All right, okay.
Okay, so it's
that
not...
kind of sparked the idea.
Okay.
And I thought, well, 7, my goodness, 7-inch single, how could we ignore it? How could we not think of it? And then Mario brewed it, and he said, my God, it's turned out at 7%. Would you believe it? So there you were.
And did it? And did you specifically go for a dark, black vinyl-looking beer? I'm reminded of a Spinal Tap blackout. There's nothing more black.
Yeah, well, no, we had to have one that was vinyl coloured, didn't we? Yes, mind you, vinyl can be...
It can be. It can
pretty
be,
much
it can
any colour. I mean, most of the vinyl records I buy today seem to be anything but black. They're a rainbow of colours.
Exactly. I mean, my favourite so far has been a vinyl that had blood injected into it, so it's got a nice blood splatter around it. It's, oh...
Whose blood?
Well, there was the Perfect Pussy one, which every bit has a little bit...
Oh, no, I don't
want to
know. What are you going to say?
No, we're not going there. Okay, let's move on. So this is a double brown stout. Wait, is this a particular favourite style of yours, or did you just decide you needed to do? Because you don't really have many dark beers, do you? Well, I mean, the alt beer is a brown, but it's still quite a light beer.
Yeah, no, this is the only beer we do that's quite so dark. No, we love this. I mean, who doesn't love a gorgeous stout? A double brown stout. The recipe on which it's based was a sort of mid-19th century London recipe. So there's lots of brown malt in there. Gives it a lot of the colour, of course, but also a lot of the nice chocolatey coffee aromas in there.
Yeah.
Stout's such a wonderful thing. It's just...
It is.
It's an indulgence, I would say.
It is. I think it's perfect for the end of a podcast as well.
Yeah.
Because it's... I mean, so... Shall I get into my notes?
I was about to say stout. So stout for music. So I'm going to make a point now and get on my soapbox. I'm appalled generally by the choices of beer at music venues. So I normally end up going for either the Red Stripe or the can of Guinness.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to drink the lager. So stout and music, yes, it always goes together.
You know what that badge... terrible choice that music venues has done for me. I don't drink at gigs.
Oh,
I make sure I get well tanked up and good quality beer beforehand in advance.
I can give you recommendations after the podcast for good venues to go to.
Oh, no, there are some coming through, which is great to see. But yeah, if I could achieve one thing in life, it would be to have lovely beers at every venue.
I know what you mean.
I think there's an appetite for it. I really think there's an appetite for it.
I think the first ever venue that I went to that actually had a decent selection of beers was Seabright Arms, which is it's one of the better music venues in London as well. But they have a phenomenal beer selection and then actually play good music downstairs. It's crazy. Yeah. However, not enough taps downstairs. Just going to say, guys, you know, if you want to get that really niche crowd of beer / music lovers, might want to fix that.
That's not so much a niche crowd.
It's not.
I don't think it is.
I don't know. Anyway,
I stole your thunder again.
So, stout.
Stout.
So, this pours like chocolate, definitely.
Pours like chocolate.
Very, very dark.
Yep.
Nice and thick. Little head. Quite a bitter aroma. It's much more on the coffee, dark chocolate end of the spectrum. It's not like a creamy chocolate. Also, this smells so much like alcohol, which is not necessarily
a bad thing.
It smells bloody strong before you even try it, which is and first taste. Wait. Yep, this is bloody strong. It's one of the things I did find yesterday when I was... So I sat down yesterday to do this one, pick some songs, and I had probably half a pint of this and felt thoroughly wasted by the end of it. It just really hits you in the guts, which is such a... But at the same time, it's not like it hits you in the guts like a nice sort of peaty whiskey would. It's more like it's like a It's like a hug of a drink.
I was just going to say that word. That's exactly the word in my head.
It's
an alcohol hug.
It is. Exactly. And it's I actually think that this...
It's a beery hug from your best mate.
It's a beery... No, it's not, though.
No?
That implies lager, and that's not good.
Oh, no, does it? Okay.
But it's funny, actually, because this is probably one of the more complex stouts that I've had recently. It's got a really nice sort of bitter chocolate, sort of dark chocolate tones, but also a real smokiness to it that is really nice. It's got a quite long linger to it as well, which I'm quite liking. And yeah, definitely, I mean, this is a serious drink. This is not something that you trifle with.
I'm definitely getting chocolatey notes.
Yeah, and that's the thing, though. It's not milk chocolate. This is a dark chocolate drink. And that's what makes me think. This is like the whiskey of stout to me. It's like this is a contemplative drink. This is a serious drink.
Yeah,
is
definitely.
That what you're going
no,
for?
No, well... I think we always like to think a touch of contemplation goes well with Orbit beers, but yes. Yeah, no, you can, the leather sofa, roaring fire, yeah, definitely.
Precisely.
Perhaps a little pipeful of tobacco, may I say, you know, could all go together.
Yes, yeah. Definitely. So, which actually, I think,
moves
quite nicely onto the music. So, okay, so I'm going to say, Andrew will know that this is quite a common go-to for me, but this,
What have you done?
This is Tom Waits.
In a glass?
In a glass.
If like, Tom Waits was in a glass ever?
Not Rocky in a, Tom Waits.
Not like in a pervy way.
I'm talking Nighthawks at the Diner, like experimental jazz Tom Waits.
Ooh.
Like smoky jazz cafe with some dude like really drunkenly tinkling on the piano. Not weeing on the piano, just playing it.
Yeah,
in the corner.
Yep.
Like this is it's got a heaviness to it. It's got a smokiness to it. It's like a smoky room, which like is that a? I don't know. It is malty as all hell.
Is Tom Waits eating chocolate in this scenario? No,
I don't know if there's a euphemism there that I'm missing.
No. I'm just thinking.
But yeah, so this is. I mean, this is quite a malty beer.
Yeah, right? No. If I think of Tom Waits drinking anything, it's probably more a whiskey or bourbon.
Yeah.
But if it was a whiskey, I'm sure it'd be a smoky Islay malt that he'd be drinking. So I can see the slight connection to that. You can't think of Tom Waits without thinking smoky.
No.
Exactly. Yeah. But
there's no smoked malt in it. So it's not, overtly. Smoky or anything like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting, because it is... I don't know if you guys are picking it up, but to me...
Maybe you are. Because I've had the Rauch beer, the Orbit Rauch beer, and that's like a bonfire. And but that, in a good way.
Yeah, well, that's 30-35% Beechwood smoked malt in it, so you should be getting a ton of that. But this is not... overtly such. I mean, there's. I think something that's so dark and complex. There's probably evocativeness, if there's such a word. A little smokiness in there. But yeah, I know there's dark malts and brown malts and all the rest of it in there.
So I got it wrong. That's fine.
No, you didn't.
I'm okay with that.
No.
It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, it's a personal interpretation.
I'm going to just sit here. I'm going to sulk in the corner. But so the thing is Tom Waits is a bit of a cliche for me. I like to pick Tom Waits. I'm basically searching for the perfect Tom Waits beer, and I think this came very close to a bit of Nighthawks at the Diner, a bit of Eggs and Sausage, bit of Emotional Weather Report.
Eggs and Sausage is a euphemism, isn't it?
No.
Okay.
It's a Tom Waits song about breakfast.
Okay.
Don't know what you're talking about, Andrew. Jesus. Giving me the eyes now. Anyway, so I've gone for something, not Tom Waits, but I think it's something that does kind of evoke this similar kind of...
Did you go for jazz?
Jazz.
Have you picked jazz?
Smoky jazz.
Have you picked jazz?
I have picked jazz. I've picked some jazz, no jazz flute, though. But I actually think that this... potentially fills in the gaps a bit better than Tom Waits does. I think this suits this quite well, because this is... we've been talking about all the things it tastes like, and it is quite a complex, deep taste.
Mm. Yeah.
So I have gone for something that I think we possibly need to pull the lights down low, light a few candles, but I've gone for a bit of Charles Mingus.
Oh.
Hey! Yeah, I'm getting a blank look from Robert, which is nice, so let's introduce
him.
Oh, okay, good.
Charlie Mingus.
bit of Charlie Mingus. So this is Charles Mingus. I'm going to play it and then get reactions. This is Charles Mingus with Goodbye Pork Pie Hat. Thank you. was a bit of Charlie Mingus with some Goodbye Pork Pie Hat.
You know the best thing about that?
Yeah.
You've picked some jazz, which means I don't have to worry about picking some jazz at least the next six podcasts.
But it didn't even have any jazz flute. It was purely jazz saxophone.
I know, but I mean, I get that. I think it was a good match for the beer. You're right.
It's I mean, it feels like we're a little bit too well lit here now, just listening
is,
to that.
Yeah. Shall I go and switch your lights off? Yeah. Well, the viewers still be able to see us if we do that. Yeah. So apparently, Charlie Mingus, who I'm not familiar with, plays a double bass.
Yes, so he's not a pianist, as I said beforehand.
And so the connection with the beer?
Double brown stout.
There we go.
Right in there.
Completely intentional. It was. I mean, when I said that I think that he's a pianist, I was just throwing you off the scent.
He may be also.
Who knows? Who knows? He's composer, band leader, and double bassist. You don't really find many band leaders who are double bassists.
It's a rare thing.
It's
a rare thing.
But I think, yeah, that for me, it was the complexity of it, the richness of it.
Well, I think even running on the whole vibe of trying to create an atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to trying to get the tonal qualities of a music that matches the beer, you've captured the atmosphere there.
Yeah, I think that for me, that in terms of just capturing that atmosphere.
Oh yes, we're using that.
Four beers in. Well, that's the thing though. It's like you wouldn't really think a smoky, dark room with some jazz. I'll have a stout. It's not. It's like, you know, usually you think of stouts with, like, to me, the typical sort of stout drinker is maybe a camera member hanging out in their local village pub, probably has a beard that is definitely not hipster.
I don't know. I mean, a stout drinker, I'm thinking Celtic. You could have picked some Celtic music there.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a good vibe.
But it's not Van American. Morrison. It's not a smoky American jazz, is it? But that to me, that was as soon as I heard that, because I was sort of doing a bit of a search for the kind of music that might sound like, and this beer, I just like, no matter what you guys said when I played it, I was going to stand by the fact that was the right choice for this beer.
No, I think you may even have redefined the drinking preferences of jazz fans this evening.
I know.
Which is a high note to finish on.
I think so.
I think it's quite good. Yeah.
I think so. I think
jazz
definitely.
Drinkers of the world drink stout.
Jazz drinkers, your call is now. You need to go and buy as many cases of Seven as you can possibly find.
Yes.
So, on that note, shall we ramp this up?
Oh, this has been awesome. I've loved this.
It's been fantastic.
Can we do this again? This is a lot of fun.
So next month, we're down back again at
Yeah. I know nothing about jazz, but I imagine it's got some freaky time signatures. 7/8.
Oh.
Perhaps that could be the way in.
Does this mean that you're going to do a beer called 8? We can do a blend of 7 and 8. We can do a nice little...
going to happen.
Bebop jazz number. Yeah. It'll be great. Anyway, thank you very much for having us down here, Robert. It's been fantastic to talk at you for quite a long time, but also to actually hear about the beers and about the brewery. It's been fantastic. I've really enjoyed it.
I've loved this.
Yeah. We'll be back next month. You won't be able to get rid of us now.
No, well, it's been my pleasure. Thank you very much for me, and you'll be welcome back every month.
Thank you very much.
So we'll wrap this up now. So, do we have anything that we need to sort of cover off before next episode?
Do we want to plug anything? Do we want to plug gigs? Do we want to plug anything? Or should we just wrap it up?
I don't think so. I think we just wrap it up. They're two separate beasts. Nobody wants to hear about our musical lives behind the scenes.
They don't, do they?
Another month for another episode.
Yes.
This has been Rhythm and Brews. I have been Luke.
I've been Andrew.
And this has been
Robert.
Or as we now know, Obert. And until next month.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.